Welcome back to another episode of the Uptime Punks. Together with my co-host, Susanna Kaas, we have Todd Coleman here today to speak about his position in the top 10 influencers in data centers. Todd, how does it make you feel?
Well, obviously super honored to be recognized in an incredible list of people to be associated with. So, you know, 25 years of hard work that goes into it. And I'm sure every one of those individuals feels the same. I'm now showing my age, but, you know, what a great recognition on the work that not only I've done, but most importantly, the people that I surround myself with. So, you know, thanks for that.
Todd, congratulations. Well deserved. Yeah. Paul and I were not surprised to see your name on the list, and we are very excited to have today's episode to actually hear what you're going to say verbally.
Yeah, it's sort of like a heavyweight title in the boxing world, isn't it? To be in the top 10. What do you think made the people vote for you to be in the top 10?
Look, I have no idea. And you know, there was probably 10 other or 20 other top 10s that could have happened with people that influence every day. And like I said, you know, I've been honored with, you know, various lists and awards, particularly over the year of 2022. I don't see any of those as individual recognition, right? It's really recognition for the people that you surround yourself with and the work that all of them do every single day. So, you know, up beyond that, I, like I said, I'm sure there's plenty of people that were equally as valued and influential that could have made the list.
Yeah. So if you look at the data center market for 23, where do you think the market is going? Where do you think is going to be the big movements, the big improvements, and maybe the downfalls?
Yeah, well, it's fascinating. I've been around this industry long enough to have seen multiple financial cycles, right? And if you look back, whether it's dot-com bubble, whether it's the recession of 2008, whether it's the pandemic, which has been a recession itself, now the sort of financial crisis driven in part by inflation, driven in part by the war in Ukraine, you know, we're in another one of those financial cycles, arguably a downturn. But typically, if you look at the digital infrastructure industry as a whole, it is historically done incredibly well coming out of those various crises. So if history is your crystal ball, then, you know, the digital infrastructure industry should continue to do well. This time around, you know, we got a couple other things at play, not just limited by coming out of the pandemic, not just limited by inflation and the war in Ukraine, the cost of oil, various other things, but we've also got a global supply constraint. And so if you would have looked back, if I had looked back, in fact, I had this conversation with my board members and my shareholders, and I have it, you know, often in the public arena, if you would have looked back, but for the global supply constraints, you would have thought that 2022 and back half of 2021 would have been record-breaking years. And in many respects, for a number of us, they were. But they were, that throttle was governed in large part by global supply constraints. And so we still deal with that. And so I think you're still going to hear that drumbeat in 2023. On top of that, you see, you know, the capital intensity of our various businesses increasing. The cost per megawatt that we've typically metriced our business around has gone up, in part because inflation, in part because global supply constraints. And then throw in what's going on in the public and private debt markets. The cost of capital has increased. And so we have a lot of factors that are arguably outside of us operators' control, but we're still responsible for managing to the best of our abilities. And so I think that continues to be the storyline for 2023. I would say I'm seeing initial signs that M&A activity is starting to pick up. And so I believe that, you know, money sat on the sidelines largely in Q4. They took the quarter of Q4 off. In reality, if you think about it, those that work in the M&A arena, if they don't do M&A deals, they don't have jobs. And so job security by itself will drive the M&A market. Money sitting on the sidelines that needs a home will drive the M&A market. And so you're starting to see particularly folks that are willing to write large equity checks on the front end, only to recollateralize and run to the debt markets as those debt markets begin to really open up. I think that's going to be part of the storyline for 2023 as well. So some level of consolidation in the market, not as great as what it could have been if we were still talking about, you know, 2-4% money. Now we're talking about 8-9%+ money from a debt perspective. But I think money always needs a home. And so I, you know, the outside investors continue to love the digital infrastructure and particularly the data center industry as a whole.
Yeah, I think it's a continuous growing market. I mean, the demand just goes up, right? More and more stuff is moving into the cloud and everything is being sort of automated. I mean, I'm doing myself some research now. I'm seeing even that the agricultural machines are moving completely into the cloud space. This means every tractor in the future is going to be also some sensor is going to be moving to the cloud. So all that space needs to go somewhere. If you look at the landscape itself, I mean, sustainability is a big buzzword, right? I mean, we discussed here many times. That's also how me and Susanna met through sustainability when she gave me her first lecture on if I want to see change, I should start with myself. I will never forget these words. I'll tell my grandkids one day. How do you see the sustainability going in the industry? I mean, companies are coming up with nice innovations, all of these things. Data centers somehow want to apply it, but what we're hearing through the great line is that the end user doesn't really want it because they're not really putting it because the costs would go up if they need to do things a little bit more sustainable. But I would like to hear what's your output and your outlook on it. Where do you think the industry is going and maybe what's the hiccups and how can we fix it? In a perfect world. Yeah, it's a long question. Yeah, I know.
It's a long conversation and multiple tentacles. It's like pushing a string of yarn to have the conversation, but it's an important conversation, right? It's gained momentum and notoriety, particularly in the last couple of years. It's an important topic. Data centers have to be part of that conversation. It's a topic that, frankly, you know, before it really became a massive buzzword, it was important to us at eStructure. It was one of our founding principles, really, as we looked at and thought about legacy around what does eStructure do from a legacy perspective? How does it impact the society around us? Society or sustainability is one of those big factors. So it's in our DNA and what we do every single day. But we're still in a capitalist-led society. And so profit loss still is important, right? Without profitability, we can't get debt, we can't invest in it. So it's a vicious cycle. And so you're right. It continues to be important. It continues to be a hot topic. We need to find ways to continue to drive the cost of it down and the demand and need from the end user up. But at the end of the day, end users will only pay for what they'll pay for, right? And so finding that equilibrium between what's good for society and what's good for planet Earth as a whole versus what will be consumed in the marketplace at the right price where there's a buyer and seller is important. You know, I think there's bigger challenges within sustainability and we deal with it and we grapple with it every day. I mean, you know, look, in 2022, we signed on to the iMasons Climate Accord that's got 70 large players in the data center and digital infrastructure industry trying to drive commonality, consistency, and even the way we speak and what we metric, right? I think, you know, you're seeing, we've done it since the beginning, and that is working with strategic partners and manufacturers in what their process is. One of the challenges for a lot of companies, us included, right? So we've committed not to a specific year, but we've committed to a range of years that we would be carbon neutral between 2030 and 2035, okay? Why didn't we pick a particular year? I can't speak for everyone out there, but I think there's a lot of marketing hype around we need a social responsibility statement. Let's pick a date or a year or a number. And pardon my language, but what the hell? Let's just go with that because we don't know anything better. And you know, I think that's interesting, but that's not delivering. And I think you got to really, the biggest challenges are understanding the end-to-end supply chain of how this all comes about, right? I could say, man, I'm super green because I drive an electric, I drive an EV, which I don't, but I could. And the fundamental reason why I don't is because I don't believe in the greening of the end-to-end supply chain yet. Not to mention, I'm not convinced that our power grids can handle it, as we've proven in the last 6 months. But until you fully understand the entire end-to-end manufacturing process of every single component that goes through that supply chain, and then every single component that your end customer brings into that data center, and then what it spews out, then how can we say we're really going to be carbon neutral? And I think that's the fundamental challenge, which is why I'm excited about the iMasons initiative, because at least let's have an honest dialogue around what our challenges are. Let's stop jumping to the end result, because I don't believe many of us control that as much as we'd like to. And let's get the right people at the table to have the right conversations, as opposed to running towards initiatives that really aren't super transparent and really is ignoring the moose in the room, which is what the hell's the end-to-end supply chain? And if I can't get my manufacturers to come to the table and tell me what their supply chain is, how do I know what mine is? So I think that's the fundamental, but I will tell you, I applaud the conversation. This conversation wasn't happening 5 years ago, and that's what's exciting about it.
Well, thank you, Todd, for sharing your thoughts. This is very helpful. As you probably know, I have been in this journey for, I guess, over 2 decades now, working with a hyperscaler and being a data center advisor for the UN. I guess I see things slightly a little bit differently at the head of state level. Indeed, it actually took a lot of efforts to even have anybody pay attention to me to have a discussion relating to UN SDG. They said, "What is it, Susanna?" And then myself coming out from a data center for 30 years, I have to say I'm an average IQ gal, and I still don't oftentimes pay attention to, for example, responsible consumption, responsible production when I was COO at eBay. Indeed, we are responsible consumption, but I'm not too sure I paid that much attention for responsible production, right, Todd? In terms of how the green electrons are being made, or they bringing it to my system, I was more worried about 24/7. But I have to admit that we need to invert, at least in my opinion, we have to invert and the status quo, take a departure of the conventional in order for us to genuinely meet it. I'm very, very proud to have the privilege to work in gigawatt scale with numerous hyperscalers in the industry. And every day when they make the announcement of their commitment for not just direct consumption, but specifically what they are trying to do and what they have already accomplished in actually having supplier responsibility other than code of conduct is extremely inspiring to me. And we will be improving, I hope, and I hope Todd actually will find a way to collaborate at the Blue Pavilion to have yourself, who is very impressive. And I know I have other top 10 already very interested in the Blue Pavilion at the COP 28. To talk about impacting results rather than still discussing about the goals and when you're going to make it. I agree with you. Many folks reacted not so positive, I guess, including my co-host, Paul, because he's seeing evidence on COP26 at Glasgow, which I guess he was there. And he's seeing all these corporate jets flew in and only landed for less than an hour or so, talking about climate action. And I completely understand that is inverting the logic about from an evidence perspective of decarbonization when you're actually generating a lot of GHG in a process, actually you're flying private jet into Glasgow, which many of them, I guess, don't even do a plane share, you know? And I assume three of us would definitely have no problem sharing a private jet if we were to fly in, right? Anyway, humor aside, I see it a little bit differently. I mean, currently now I'm definitely actively working on over 20 plus gigawatt of renewable energy that is zero carbon, zero emission, and also very, very focused on reusing a lot of the waste from the data center and really achieving reducing, eliminating, and eliminating GHG in the first place at a hyperscaler. So I was just wondering what you think are your priorities within your, you know, enterprise in a data center, which definitely you guys have seen growth. I spoke with very impressive colleagues of yours that report into you, very impressive people, by the way, that you have bring around you. I was just wondering, maybe you can share with the audience, what are your priorities for 2023 in terms of helping to achieve some of the sustainability target that you had in mind?
Yeah, and by the way, I don't disagree with you in terms of some of the work that's going on in terms of changing the way we think, changing the way we invest, changing the way we purchase green energy, the way that we build and construct. And so I think those are important wins, but those are smaller wins in the grand scheme of the conversation that needs to be had. But I think those are super important to changing the industry and the mindset. And I also agree with your analogy around private jets, right? Many, many people naturally want it, desire it, but oh, holy cow, is it gonna, it's gonna change me personally? Oh, I didn't really mean that. So I think that's part of the conversation. And so, you know, for us, we continue to be committed. You know, we've been managing to a water utilization efficiency standard metric for years, even before that term became in vogue. You know, how we handle heat rejection, handing the heat off, whether it's to heat our offices, you know, we offer it to, you know, residents and commercial buildings that surround us. And so those are important attributes. You know, water efficiency, particularly in our new builds, which we focused on brownfield versus greenfield, so that we're utilizing and reutilizing construction materials that have already been produced, as opposed to putting some, you know, demolishing something that exists and reusing it. You know, perfect example, we took a former Montreal Gazette printing building. You know, it was built in 1999. You probably couldn't pick a worse time to build a newspaper printing plant. And, you know, it was shut down in the early 2000s. And by 2018, we've converted it from the industrial age to the digital age. And now it's a hyperscale facility with, you know, 30 megawatts of clean power coming in, thanks to Hydro-Québec. And so those are continuing to be some of our key initiatives. 2023, we have a lot of construction, new design and building going on, much of which is going into existing buildings. All of our new buildings focus on a WUE metric, you know, save for toilets, sinks, and humidification. Our new builds are generally water neutral. And that's an important aspect. PUE continues to be an important attribute for us. It's a metric that's been around for years, but that also dovetails into where we built. You know, there's a reason why we're focused on the Canadian market. There's a reason why we're north of the border. We have the benefit of certain climate attributes that allow us to drive greater efficiency. Generally speaking, and I use the word carefully, generally speaking, we don't use water in our builds. Now, unfortunately, like all of us, we have some older facilities, some older technology. And so when we update those facilities that maybe we've acquired through acquisition, then we're moving to a more water neutral approach in terms of closed loop cooling and other things that we can do that try to reduce or eliminate water utilization. But I will say, as you pointed out, I'm aware of a lot of data centers being built in super warm climates, and I'm aware of a lot of mega users going out and hitting the local communities and the cities for multiple millions of gallons of water demand on a daily basis. So it's evidence that we still have a lot of room to go. And at the end, I think it's what we talked about at the beginning, which is what's the cost to go deploy those technologies? What's the benefit and return? Can I monetize that? If I can't, can I justify it based on what that particular company and culture believes at the core? And I think that's driving some of the decision making. But again, I'm on board. I'm fully applauding everything everyone's doing, what they're signing up to, but I want to see more meat on the bone.
That's I want to add something because Susanna, you missed a part, the most important part about the story with the COP26. They had Tesla cars for the head of state who took them from the airport to the venue. They forgot to bring charging station. They had Caterpillar generators outside the hotels charging the Teslas. This just shows you where it goes wrong. Anyways, I just wanted to drop this one
in. The other thing that we continue to work on, we've been working on for a while, right? And you know, technologies that we use in the data center. So let's take batteries, for example. As a society, we're all dependent on lithium batteries, right? I probably have, within my arm's reach, I probably have 6 IoT devices all using lithium ion batteries. Not sustainable, not a natural resource in great supply, right? So while we all applaud that, and all of our EVs are running off same lithium batteries. So those are examples where it's interesting, it's not enough. Like we need to be driving, you know, there's lots of work going on in hydrogen. I applaud that. You know, guess what? The Earth's surface is covered with 97% water, most of which is unusable, save for about 3%, except for if we can take that and turn that into a battery technology. Oh my God. You know, if we can reduce the footprint, if we can change the capacity of it. Oh my God. Now all of a sudden we're really doing something that can impact society as a whole. And so though that's why I say it's not enough. I love the conversations, but I think we're missing great opportunities to drive benefit and scale.
Yeah, that's what I think that's basically where the opportunity comes in. We have come a long way in a short time, and there's more to come. And indeed, I think, Paul, you and I were in part of the conversation with a webinar recently in terms of really getting rid of that dirty fuel and switch over to hydrogen and have water as a byproduct, which is amazing in that regard. Well, we look forward to a lot of great things with Todd. I definitely know that for sure.
Yeah. Todd, the last words are yours. What do you want to leave for the generation to come?
Well, look, first off, thanks for the recognition. Thanks for having me today.
Yeah.
We're super excited and passionate about the industry in which we operate. I mean, who'd have thought that you could get excited over power and cooling and big infrastructure, but it is an important attribute. I think there's lots of work ahead of us. E-Structure is committed to participating in that conversation every step of the way. I think there's a lot of education that needs to go on. We've touched on some of that around sustainability. I think there's a lot of education that needs to go on with the local communities in which we operate, the governmental entities that are looking at it and saying, well, what are these massive data centers coming into our communities and consuming all of our power? Educating them on what the benefits are, educating them on the, not necessarily the direct job creation that comes out of a 24/7 facility, but the indirect job creation that comes out of a 24/7 mission critical facility. And so we will absolutely be and are committed to be part of that conversation. But beyond that, like, we're investors. We believe in this space. We've been fortunate enough to see incredible growth. We believe in the Canadian market in which we operate and the people that we surround ourselves with. And so we look forward to coming back to you and talking about bigger and better things going forward.
Perfect. Thank you, Todd. It was a pleasure having you here. Thank you.
All right.
Thank
pleasure.
You. Cheers.
Thank you, Todd.
Bye. Take care.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye, Paul. Thank you, Paul.